It's one small step for man.
There is no planet B.
I stand here today humbled.
You turn if you want to.
I will not be lectured about sexism.
The winner is Cindy.
This week in history. On June the 19th, 1865, 157 years ago today, Order No. 3 was issued by a general with the United States Union named Gordon Granger in the town of Galveston in Texas. This order read, "The people of Texas are informed that in accordance with a proclamation from the executive of the United States, all slaves are free." Texas was the final state in what had been America's secessionist South to officially end slavery following the end of the Civil War. And the anniversary of this order being issued is being celebrated across America today with a public holiday known as Juneteenth, a holiday that only came into existence last year when US President Joe Biden signed the holiday into law. Joining us from the town of Galveston in This Week in History tonight is Sam Collins, who is the co-chair and president of the Juneteenth Legacy Project. Hello, Sam, and welcome to Nightlife.
Thank you for that wonderful invitation. So glad to be with you this morning. But it is wonderful to be celebrating Juneteenth around the world now.
Yes. So, Sam, tell us a little bit about Galveston first, because I didn't know this, but it's an island off the coast of Texas, isn't it?
Absolutely. A lot of people don't realize that Texas has an island, but we are truly surrounded by water. Galveston, many locals pride themselves of being BOIs, born on island. It's almost like a separate nation or something. But yes, we are probably about 50,000 people, but have over 7 million visitors a year. Of course, it's Houston's playground, and people come down to the beach, and the water is just a magnet and attraction. So it's just a wonderful thing to be on the island and with all this rich history. Galveston was so important to Texas history. It was at one point the largest city in Texas in the early and mid and late 1800s, before the 1900 storm wiped out a large part of the population.
Mm. All right, Sam, well, let's head back to the Civil War. Texas was the seventh state to join the Confederacy in 1861. Was Texas a big slave-owning state back then?
Well, Texas was a young state in comparison to the other states in the United States. Texas did not join the Union until December 29th, 1845. So by the time of the Civil War, they had only been a part of the United States for 16 years. And their enslaved population had grew from about 58,000 in 1850 to 187,000 by 1860.
Right.
And then over 250,000 by 1865. So it was expanding rapidly because of all the land in Texas, but they were not the largest. They were probably the 9th or 10th in slave population in the United States at that time, but it was growing rapidly.
Okay. So, Sam, the actual declaration of the emancipation of slaves was done in various steps during the course of the war and afterwards. So when did the U.S. President Abraham Lincoln first declare emancipation, and for which particular slaves?
Yes. So Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation September 22nd, 1862. And the thing is, Galveston actually was under Union control at that time, the port city, not the whole state of Texas, but just the island. And there was a Battle of Galveston January 1st, 1863, in which the Emancipation Proclamation was to go into effect, but the Confederate states took back control of the island, therefore delaying enforcement of that Emancipation Proclamation, which only applied to states in rebellion. It did not apply to Union states that had enslaved people that were under Lincoln's control, because the Confederate states did not consider him their president.
I see. So Texas had been included in Lincoln's 1863 proclamation as it was part of the Confederacy, but presumably that declaration was meaningless, wasn't it, unless it could be enforced by Union troops. But did many Texan slaves take that declaration as an incentive to try to escape and head north?
Well, the thing about Texas, enslaved people did not run north for freedom. They actually ran south to Mexico. Ah. Mexico was much closer, and Mexico had outlawed slavery in the 20s, 1820s. That's why Texas, in the Texas Revolution, they fought in 1836, and that's how Texas became an independent nation. Between 1836 and 45, it was its own country, and some think we still think we're our own country because of the size and the history of the state. So Texas was independent for 9 years and joined the Union. But enslaved people ran south, which was much closer than Canada. Plus, Oklahoma territory was an enslaved territory too. So they would have had to run through many states and areas. It was much easier to get to Mexico.
Yeah. For this week in history, we're talking about Juneteenth, June the 19th, 1865, the date that Texas becomes the final former Confederate state to free the slaves following the American Civil War. And with me is Sam Collins, who is co-chair of the Juneteenth Legacy Project. All right, so the slaves are heading to Mexico. So the Civil War came to an end in April 1865 with the surrender of Robert E. Lee, his last major Confederate army at the Appomattox Courthouse. What was the immediate effect on slaves in other parts of the Confederacy, Sam? Did slave owners simply set their slaves free as the order required? Well,
great question. No, they were not happy about that. And freedom came as Union soldiers moved from city to city. As they advanced with victories, freedom came at different times. So in Florida, their Emancipation Day is May 20th. In other states and areas, they have different Emancipation Days because the soldiers arrived there at a different time. So Texas being farthest west is the reason that it was pretty much the last. And Galveston was the last major port west of New Orleans, and many of the soldiers that came into Galveston were United States colored troops. So 75% of the soldiers coming into Texas by January of 1866, were black soldiers. General Philip Sheridan said he had 6,500 white soldiers in Texas, 19,768. So the reason for that imbalance there is many white soldiers after Appomattox were mustered out and were allowed to go back home because they had been fighting longer. But those soldiers that had enlisted in 63, 64, for 3 years of service, many of them were former enslaved people that had ran away and joined the Union. Some free blacks that were allowed to join the Union Army, they were ordered over into Texas. And at one point there was possibly going to be as many as 150,000 sent into Texas. But Texas had tried to negotiate a surrender without having total Union occupation of that many soldiers coming. So while soldiers came, it never got to that level of over 100,000, but many were ordered over into Texas and then they left. But what many people don't understand is that those Union soldiers, many of them were United States colored troops, and they fought for their own freedom. They fought for their families. They loved their families, their wives and children. So they were fighting for freedom and they helped save America. And we're proud of that fact.
It must have been symbolically something extraordinary to see for the Texans to see this U.S. colored troop arriving.
Yeah, my grandmother has a childhood friend. They're both almost 90 now. She says her grandfather told her it was not a piece of paper that freed the enslaved people of Texas, but it was the men with the guns. And many of those men were United States colored troops. So here we're for the first time seeing individuals in positions of strength and authority, having a weapon and being able to use it. They would have just been amazed to see them moving through, and the soldiers were proud to be able to fight for them. They had been wanting to fight for years and finally had an opportunity to fight and help the Union win.
Sam, you mentioned that Texas was the last, largely because of geographical location. It was so far west. So we have General Gordon Granger then arriving in Galveston on June the 18th, 1865, and issuing the proclamation the next day. Was Galveston the place where it happened simply because that's just where Granger and his troops happened to have landed?
Well, Granger was ordered here by Philip Sheridan to come over to Galveston and to take control of Texas. So there were some ships that were ordered to the southern border to secure Texas, the Texas-Mexico border, and also to cut off any Confederates trying to run south out of Texas. And they came to Galveston for supplies. But Granger was ordered over to Galveston directly because Galveston was the major commercial center, the largest enslaver had his home here. He owned seven plantations, but he lived here, and his brother, David Mills, Robert Mills was the one that lived in Galveston. David Mills lived in Brazoria County. They had four plantations in Brazoria County, two in Matagorda and one in Fort Bend. So Galveston was kind of what they considered the New York of the South. And then, you know, it was the New Orleans of kind of Texas, major port city. So it was so important to the state of Texas that by capturing Galveston and getting control of the island, then you basically had control of Texas.
Right. And what are the stories, Sam, about where and how many times this proclamation to free the slaves, how order number three, how many times it was read that day?
Yeah, that is a legend or myth. There's no documentation that Granger actually made a public reading of the general orders. That's not really how the military operated in that time period. But on the southwest corner, I'm actually sitting on the southwest corner of 22nd and Strand. There used to be a building, the Osterman building, where the Union headquarters was located. Granger set up his headquarters there and then had Major Frederick Emery Wright and signed General Order Number 3 under his authority. And then the soldiers took that message out throughout the city, posting notice in various locations. And then further inland, as they left Galveston Island, when they made it to plantation sites, the enslaved people were gathered around a house or a big tree, and the soldiers were sharing information, or the plantation owner would then read something to them. So while there's a lot of reenactments of that happening in Galveston, it didn't actually happen exactly like that in Galveston, but it's an important part of the story because individuals, there was no internet or, you know, instant messaging. So the only way people were able to get messages is through telegraph or when the soldiers arrived on horseback or walking. So they had to walk into San Antonio or Houston or other areas inside in the interior of Texas after they left Galveston. Some of them left on ships going to other ports further south, and then some left just going into the interior, either on train or walking.
What an amazing day. Would the slaves have had any idea they were about to be freed? Did they get any inclination before this?
Well, in 1862, when Galveston was under Union control, after the Battle of Galveston, there were some prisoners of war. So some of the white soldiers became prisoners of war. The black soldiers that were in the battle, when they were captured, they were sold into slavery. I have one example of a young man that was sold for $47. So as they enter into these plantations, they're sharing information about the war and what's happening, and eventually you will be free. The Emancipation Proclamation is printed in at least 125 papers over that two-year period between 62 and 64, at least identified 125 times. Now, the enslaved people were not reading, but they would have been listening to all the conversations of the business owners and enslavers talking about the war. So they had some idea that with a Union victory, they would receive their freedom, but until it actually happens, You know, it's one of those things that you're hoping, praying, and believing it will happen, but there had to be shock and just celebration when it finally happened. Mm. Because you're talking about decades and a couple of hundred years of enslavement in this country. So it would have been a shock that now all of a sudden you're free.
Yeah, extraordinary. Sam Collins is with me, co-chair of the Juneteenth Legacy Project. And for this week in history, we're looking at Juneteenth that happened on this day, June the 19th, 1865, when Texas becomes the final former Confederate state to free slaves following the American Civil War. All right, Sam, there's been research which suggests that it was not just Granger and his troops who arrived in Galveston that week, but that several U.S. Colored troop regiments you've mentioned also arrived, and we talked about symbolically how important that would have been. So once the news spread around Galveston, what do we know about how these freed slaves celebrated? Did they, you know, once the shock had settled, did they just decide, okay, we're heading off?
Well, some left immediately, but in general order number three, there is this Granger instructs Emory to write that the freedmen are advised to remain at their present homes and work for wages, that they would not be supported there or anywhere in idleness. So they're saying, hey, you're free, but you can't go anywhere. But some plantation owners were so frustrated, they just said, hey, you're free to go. And people started looking for family members. They started traveling to different areas, trying to reconnect with their family. In Galveston, according to research by Ed Cotham, a Civil War historian, the first Freedmen's Fancy Ball was July 1st, 1865. A black promoter in town put it together very quickly a couple of weeks after the event. And then after the celebration, the mayor had him arrested for not getting a permit. Oh. But the Union Army had given him permission, who was in control of the island. They turned around and arrested the mayor and put him in the same jail and let the promoter out. And the promoter held another celebration mid-July. So they started celebrating immediately. And there was resistance to that celebration, as in the example that the mayor arrested that individual for not having a permit. But the Union Army was in control and had given him permission to have a celebration. So we've been celebrating ever since.
Yeah. So 1 year on from that very, very significant date, how was Juneteenth celebrated a year after the event, Sam?
Yeah, so the former enslaved always felt like June 19th was their Independence Day, and they made it a point to always celebrate on June 19th. So that would have been church programs, events. Here in more recent history, Juneteenth is celebrated over a couple of week time period in Galveston. So there are activities beginning at the beginning of the month with pageants and dinners. And then you have closer to the day, like yesterday, the 18th, they had a parade festival, which is almost always on the Saturday closest to the 19th. But that first year, they would have definitely, not only on that first year, there's a Richard Nelson has a great speech from 1871 where he's commemorating the Emancipation Day 6 years later. And individuals can find that if they just Google or search for Richard Nelson 1871 Juneteenth speech. And, you know, you get a firsthand account of how people were celebrating at that time. And he honored the Union soldiers in that speech and said, you know, he remembers that day. So that day was so important to them, and they always wanted to do it on June 19th. July 4th represents a freedom birthday for the country, and June 19th represents a freedom birthday for the former enslaved. So while we were not perfect in 1619, 1865, or even today, we're trying to move to a more perfect union. And that is why we hope everyone embrace this Independence Day celebration. from June 19th to July 4th, when we can all celebrate freedom and liberty.
Sam, there was obviously this era of the Jim Crow laws, which basically legalized segregation of black Americans in the South. So how was the celebration of Juneteenth affected during that era?
Well, the thing is, many Southerners respected that on June 19th, you were not going to get a lot of work out of black people. So even in that oppressive environment, employers often unofficially had given that day off to their black workers.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it was traditional. So while Juneteenth became popular in 2020 and was added to the national calendar in 2021 by being officially a holiday, it has always been a day inside of the African-American community that was seen as an independence. While not celebrated on the large scale or with the popularity, it was always pretty much respected that this is our Independence Day, and people have been celebrating for years. Some of the employers years ago, donated cows and food and things so people could have barbecues. And then there were places like Emancipation Park in Houston, established in 1872, former enslaved individuals pooled their resources and with $800 bought a 10-acre tract. And this year celebrates 150 years of continuous commemoration at that park and location. So it has always been important to the community to celebrate that. And again, while it became popular in 2020 or 2021, it didn't become more important. It was always important.
This is Nightlife with Indira and I Do, and Sam Collins is with me, co-chair of the Juneteenth Legacy Project. Despite this acknowledgement of Juneteenth and its importance, I understand that there was still an increase in black people leaving Texas for other southern states, though, at this time, Sam.
Yeah, and not only leaving for other southern states, leaving for northern states, going north, going west out to California. That was a great exodus of migration of people leaving the oppressive South. So life was still during the Jim Crow time period after the Compromise of 1877. In 1877, Union troops were pulled out of the South that had been there to help protect black families and black people to make sure, individuals were treated fairly.
Mm.
So while the Jim Crow period between that 77, 1880s to the 1960s was oppressive, there were many black towns and settlements, freedom colonies that were set up in a segregated community where individuals had their businesses and they had their churches and their lives, and they were self-sufficient. So the negative oppressive environment was there, but even in that environment, people thrived. Between 1865 and 1915, more historically black colleges and universities were established, banks, businesses. You had very successful towns and cities. Galveston was one of those areas where black laborers on the wharf could receive equal pay as white laborers. So you had a prosperous middle class in Galveston, even all the way through the 1940s or 50s, before jobs started to move up to Houston. Galveston had a very prosperous middle class of blacks and even elite blacks. One of the top 100 richest Negroes in America lived in Galveston in the early 1960s, a man named T.D. Armstrong. So they established cities and towns, and the very first black high school in the state of Texas was in Galveston Central High School, established in 1885. So a lot of very successful people, even in that oppressive environment.
Yeah. And Sam, when did Juneteenth become an official holiday in Texas?
In 1979, late state Representative Al Edwards introduced House Bill 1016 and was able to get it passed and approved. But 100 years before that, in 1879, a man named Robert Evans, a state representative from Navasota, Texas, had tried to get Juneteenth recognized in the state, but it did not pass. It was not approved. So again, I think about the ancestors and elders that were fighting for years to be recognized, even though it wasn't approved. They were doing the good fight. But Al Edwards was able to get it passed in 1979. And then from there, other individuals, including Dr. Ronald Myers, who established the National Juneteenth Observance Foundation in 1994, mid-90s, had been pushing for a national holiday for over 26 years before it became popular. Doc died in 2018, so he didn't get to live to see it. But he planted the seeds and built a national network of Juneteenth planners and directors and helped to get Juneteenth recognized in over 40 states before he passed. So the momentum had already been building with people doing the work. And so when President Biden signed it, we were all elated. All these Juneteenth directors and planners from all across the country that have been working for years.
Yeah, 26 years, what a long time. Yeah,
Ms. Opal Lee became the face and known as the grandmother of Juneteenth. She's 95 years old. She's been walking around the country in different cities trying to bring attention since 2016. So that was a lot of publicity for her in recent years, but she was part of a much larger team. So
is she still alive, Opal?
She is still alive. Miss Opal is still alive. You know, I should have called her and got her on the phone this morning.
Yeah.
Or this tonight for you, for nightlife.
And what is so special about her? Because obviously she was able to galvanize people. I suppose Galveston.
Oh yeah, Miss Opal. she's you think about someone 90 years old, walking 2.5 miles in various cities in the heat. She is an amazing individual, and her story includes on June 19th, when she was about 13 years old, 12 or 13, a mob of about 500 people burned down her home, her parents' home, where she was living, because they had moved in a neighborhood and the white residents didn't want them there in the Fort Worth area. So on June 19th, this event happened to her, but instead of being angry and hateful about it, her parents just worked and built another house, and she took that throughout her life's work to try to do good, to help more people and to bridge the gap between communities. She believes that Juneteenth can be a healer, and she's done incredible work, and she's even walked here in Galveston a couple of times. She's in the Fort Worth area. So I can get you in touch with her. Her granddaughter, who sets her schedule, and they would love to talk to you around the world.
Yeah, how lovely. When President Biden made the declaration of Juneteenth as a national holiday this time last year, how significant then, after all these years of campaigning, was it for the folk of Galveston?
Oh, it was... the national group that had been working for years, that network of individuals, Galveston's collaboration here locally was more on a local level. I was one of the few people working with the national group. But when it finally kind of broke through, it's like a constant dripping, and then the floodgates open. So we're getting calls from around the world to talk about Juneteenth. Everybody wants to know what happened in Galveston. What were the events like? What were the people doing? And we're so glad to share our story. I even took a class to become a certified tourism ambassador, promoting all things Galveston. Galveston has such a rich history. And this is allowing us to tell more of the story. I often use the analogy of a green salad. The lettuce and tomatoes are the stories you hear all the time of the founding fathers and early settlers, but this history salad includes croutons, bacon bits, pickles, onions, hot peppers, and other things that spice it up.
All the bits that I like in my salad.
All the things that you like in the salad. So we're telling more of the story, and all around the world we need to tell more stories. Galveston even has a connection to Australia, where The Galveston giant, Jack Johnson, won his heavyweight title in 1908, defeating Tommy Burns. He had to chase him around the world, and he won his title in Australia. So Galveston is connected to so many areas and so many places, and we're so glad to just share more of that story today.
And Sam, given the ongoing struggles that we've seen highlighted in the Black Lives Matter movement, how important is this story and telling this story to the...
Another good question. It's extremely important that individuals realize that absolute equality, which is mentioned in General Order Number 3, is about giving every human being an equal opportunity to become the very best version of themselves without hurdles or barriers hindering their growth or development. So absolute equality is not about having equal results for everyone. It's about giving everyone an opportunity to be their very best. We're all floating on this rock we call Earth. We're all in this together. We're all 100% human. And the sooner that we can learn to coexist together, the better. So this Juneteenth holiday gives us a platform and an opportunity to share more history that has been left out of the history books. Again, not just about pain and suffering, but also about success. We need inspiring stories like John Rufus Gibson, who was a principal here in Galveston for 48 years at one high school. That's not a monument, a sign, a building, or nothing with his name on it. And he gave over 50 years of his life to educating children in Galveston. And he shouldn't be celebrated as an African-American. He should be celebrated as a human being that dedicated his life to improving the lives of others through education. All educators can celebrate that. Dr. Dudley Woodard, the second African-American to receive a PhD in mathematics, was born right here in Galveston. That is an inspiring story. I don't know many human beings with PhDs in mathematics. He happened to be African-American, but we should just celebrate his success as a human being. And this platform gives us an opportunity to tell more of those stories, to face the truth of the past. Maya Angelou has a quote, "History, despite its wrenching pain, cannot be unlived, but if faced with courage, need not be lived again." So what we have to do is look at that history, be honest about it, but also be inclusive of all of the successful stories that go along with the oppressive stories, so that people can be inspired by the good and warned about the bad to make sure that we never repeat the mistakes of the past.
Thank you, Sam. Thank you for giving us the history of this day and sharing your time with us. It's Juneteenth there in Galveston right now, so we wish you all the best in your celebrations today. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for the invitation, and we're going to be celebrating all day today and tomorrow. Hopefully y'all can hear us all the way in Australia.
I can hear you now, Sam. Thank you. Sam Collins, co-chair of the Juneteenth Legacy Project, talking us on This Week in History about this day, June the 19th, 1865, when Texas became the final former Confederate state to free the slaves following the American Civil War.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.